Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in music producer, DJ, and house music aficionado, the one and only Andrew DJ Shambhala Concha. Andrew, welcome, my friend.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you.
Dude, we're so happy to have you here, man.
Oh, yeah. This is so full circle.
Tell me about it.
Definitely. So, yeah.
So I know that music has been part of your lifeblood from the get-go.
Yes.
Rewind me all the way back to when you can remember, maybe in times in California or when you first started getting into music. What kind of music was it? Where were you at?
I was into like Pantera, Metallica, Sepultura. I wanted to be a singer and I learned how to play the guitar real, real bad. And that was literally the first, like, was me trying to doodle and to like learn Nirvana and like learn something to play, you know, and I never went anywhere. Because it was not good enough, you know, for that. And then I got into like working out and do like aerobics.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard house. That's kind of like when I heard electronic music was through workout videos and workout things and workout. And
how old were you at this point? Where were you at?
Like early 17, like, you know, I was young, like, you know, because I wanted to like do things. But I didn't know what I was. But I love like rock, and I love all that darkness of like Sepultura and Pantera, and I was so into that for many years. Before I,
how did you get into that? It just came on the radio.
I think it was more people in my high school, you know, friends, you know, The Cure, like,
yes,
all those people, all those bands were prevalent in my life as I grew up. There was nothing electronic about it. I think in my late 20s, that's what I. You know, to be fair, like the first time I think there was these DJs that came to America during the late 80s, and there was Sasha and John Digweed,
mm-hmm.
and they were doing this something tour. I forgot the name of it. And I got to go see them. And that was the first time I got to see like a DJ, you know, format complex with this sound and the lights and like a music event. First time I see that. First time I see a DJ in my life was them. So I should think with progressive house. I ended up loving that music, you know. It's also like the fact that here in America was none of that was here in a sense of in a bigger arenas. You know, everything was like underground raves. Like you have to go to this place to get a ticket to go to the next parking lot to get the ticket to pay the guy to get the map.
So you're talking what, mid-90s,
yes,
late 90s?
That was like literally, Raves was what it was. It was not like, there was no EDC. The festivals didn't exist when it came to electronic music. Rock concerts existed, and it was all generated for rock when it came to that. Because that was not, the merge didn't happen, I think, a little later.
So how did you get exposed to the underground?
Oh,
I mean, DJ workout videos gonna hear you the beat, but how do you get exposed to the scene?
You know, I was going to college to be a filmmaker, and I was going.
Where
to
was this?
Pasadena City College in California, in Pasadena.
Yeah.
And it was LA. It was like there was something all the time happening, and whatever was new was in LA. Whatever was new in general, right? I think the first DJs I got to see that I remember was like, Mark Farina was one of them, but John Digweed, Sasha, a guy named Paul Van Dyke.
Oh, yeah.
This really hard trance.
Yep.
I got into that for a little too myself. But this is the moment I was just a dancer. I was just a goer. And I didn't thought about making or even want a DJ. It happened way later.
So how do you get it? What are these venues where you see these DJs look like? What's the exposure to the world
look
like?
Well, the one in LA was actually the amphitheater that they have there for comedies and concerts. That's what I saw them. So it was a predetermined place already created for that. So it was not.
Gotcha.
But it was crazy to see it on that premises of a DJ.
Right.
I went there to see like classical music and rock bands and then you get to see that. It was interesting too. I mean, there was a combination of things too. I mean, there were, you know, my friend Molly was around and it was always fun.
Right.
You know, because for all of us was new. And I think that really merged and helped the experience when he came to that type of music. And as I went through it, I ended up living here in Bradenton, actually. And I had a roommate for maybe a year or so. He was a DJ. He played drum and bass. And the kid did wrong things, you know, wrong crowd, and he went to jail. And when her family, her mom came to the house to pick up the equipment, she told me, "You want it? I don't want to take that with me." And I'm like, "Okay." And it was the first time I had it. I still have the techniques. Two techniques, a mixer, old school Numeric mixer, and a bunch of records from drum and bass and breakbeats. And that's what I started DJing with for many years. And
so you hadn't DJed at all to the point where you get left some equipment.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me about the first time you hook it up and the first time you put the record on. You thinking you're going
to
do this?
I never touch it. I mean, to be fair, when the room was empty and I didn't need him as a roommate, I was doing okay. Oh my God! At that time, I was a waiter. I was working for the beach house, and it was such a long time ago. And as he progressed, me thinking about it, I haven't thought about this in a long time. It was also something really interesting, because that beginning of drum and bass was beginning to, like, I would go to a site called God is a DJ. That's the site I went to.
Nice.
And it was a site that teach you how to DJ. You know, like, they would give you all the basics when it came to the idea of merging things. So I come from a technique of a DJ, an old technique, that is the ability to merge tracks together, but not on the idea to change the track and move on, but the idea of merging them together and create a new song.
Ah.
So that's more a production aspect of it. That is not a 16 bars where you change over and go to another song.
Mm-hmm.
You're now laying over one on top of the other. And if you have four decks, then you're able to do a cappellas with voices or sounds. You can do, so you're creating an aspect of that ability of mixing that it changes, which you're not now doing it live. And so it changes. The work is harder. The ability to do it is harder, you know, no matter if you can sync. So it is interesting when it comes to that, because it makes things thicker, more interesting, and also makes me sound different and be able to be, you know, Shambhala in the sense of that sound. You know?
Right.
But I think that I got a little away from what I was trying to say. So in the beginning with the turntables, I played drum and bass only because I didn't know anything else.
And the records were there.
The records were there, but I didn't know anything else. And the guy had okay taste. He had TB and a couple of records from Good Looking. And Good Looking means like atmospheric drum and bass. It's not really hard, but like it was really, really nice. And as the time progresses, I met a guy named DJ King. That's hilarious. He lived at the beach. He lives in Nanamari Island. And this kid had already a thing going. Like a drum and bass following, house following. He heard me playing drum and bass, and he liked to play drum and bass because I used to play, like, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, so I kind of did a lot of layovers, but it was more changing over to the next song, just because, you know, you freak out, you don't know what you're doing. So I did that for maybe a year or two, and I got better, and the first time I felt like I made it, it was 2 years into DJing, I got to open up for a guy named LTJ Bookham.
Oh, and that's a household drum and bass name.
That was huge to me.
Yeah.
And we got to play for him. And me and Mike Brown, Big Worm.
Yeah.
Shout out to Big Worm. and we went out and played for this after party for him. And I had all these records, and he came and signed them. And
nice.
And this is a good one. I had a record, a Welcome to Atlantis, I think it's Atlantis something, and it was his first release that you can ever made. He didn't have a record. I had two records of that, because I do a trick with the two records.
Right.
He saw me doing the trick, so he came over to the booth and he told me the story. He doesn't have the press anymore, he doesn't have this record. So I give it to him, and then he took the rest and signed like four records.
Dang.
It was a great experience for me at that point. But as things got better and better, you know, I, you know, went into trance. I went into all the different genres.
Just to learn to be able to DJ more?
But it was like, it was a calling because Progressive House was the first thing I ever seen before I was a DJ. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, like there was something there that I wanted to. That's why I like atmospheric so much, because of the layers of like the ethereal sounds. They're just real thick and just there. Like you can feel that presence of that sound without even drums being part of it. And I feel like that is what progressive house, trance, kind of brought to the picture in those times, early '90s. And you know, Pollock and Fall and all these people, they were so, you know, today I hear them, I was like, man, they were so cheesy. But for that time was what it was. It was nothing else.
Right.
And today the saturation of music artists is incredible when it comes to the amount of them. If they're good or bad, there's just many.
Right.
That's why when it's like, when people come to me with like boutique sounds of certain things, it's interesting because boutique sounds are becoming more and more prevalent in big cities.
Right.
The idea of like, I don't know. I remember when you and I worked together, we had a lot of clubs that play top 40 music and certain formats of music. And that still today hasn't even changed. Places that you and I know, they're stables in Sarasota or Bradenton, they still play not the same music, but they still play the same idea of the format of the top 40, top 20s, or whatever music is prevalent to the crowd of that time, of some sort of music that became part of the nightlife of certain culture.
Right.
Interested. Like,
exactly.
It's so interesting. I found that so interesting sometimes. I don't want to be that kind of DJ because it takes a lot of work, and it's also, it takes a muscle to DJ that is different than when you DJ electronic music.
Yeah, right. So that's exactly what it was making me think. So as you're starting to explore around into different genres and the things that you like, the ethereal sounds and all that, how do you start to develop your format? And when do you start knowing that you got that ground under you and you feel confident you got an identity?
It took a long time, really, because in the beginning, all I could do to create a culture, to create the culture, was to do my own parties when it came to do warehouse parties.
Ah.
And I had my first warehouse with Mr. Reynolds right here downtown in 10th Street. It was our first warehouse. We did that for almost 3 years, and it was a life changing thing because it was almost like everything got together perfectly. I had a warehouse where I could play records. A new record shop just opened, and this guy had anything that I ever want to, from Bedrock to Perfect to Paul Van Dyke's label. Perfecto was the one for Paul Oakenfold. All these labels that he had there, and I bought so much records at a warehouse. I still have a one-room warehouse full of records that I have to take out and go through them again. And that's happening this weekend on Saturday in Mandarin Height. All vinyl, all night. So through that process, because of I was lucky not to go to Tampa, go to St. Petersburg to buy music. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way you could play music at that time was a record. Before, you know, CDs were already there, but I was not CD ready. You know, I didn't have CD players or anything like that.
And the equipment really hadn't gotten quite
changed,
there yet.
You know, when it came to that, you know, you got, I think you can say that a good 20 years of records before there was any other choice.
Right.
You know, when it came to that part of a culture, you know, because if you go all the way down to the 70s, 90s, the first CDJs came right at the end of the 90s. So that's almost 20 years of just vinyl. So
right.
I remember me, when I have to play 4 hours, I have to bring 4 crates for 8 hours.
God dang.
And they're heavy. They're 80 pounds a piece, you know, more than 50 records. So it was interesting today what you have is a thumb drive and you have like 1,000 songs and you can play for 2 days without going to the bathroom. I mean, it's just different. And when it comes to that ability of playing records, as you get to it and you learn the technique, and I also learned how to scratch and That's another story right there too. With somebody you know, with a P&A artist. Oh man, I just forgot his name. Oh, so sad. We used to call ourselves the Digineers.
Nice.
And we play. He played the keyboards and bass, and we had a guitarist singer, and I was Scratch Records that we do covers. So we did The Doors, we did Jimi Hendrix, we did Beastie Boys, and I would scratch the beginning of the songs, and then he would start playing them, and then I would just keep scratching, and then they would play the song and sing.
That's cool. You
know, it was like a Blink 187 type of thing.
Yeah.
Before it was any of that. We had one gig. It was in the Car Museum. He worked at Sal Mash. I can't believe I forgot his name. He was a virtuoso. That kid was such a steal. He now DJs. He came to my side. I remember his name later. He's a great kid, man. You love him. I know you remember him too.
I'm sure
Big
would.
Big Beer. He used to play the keyboards.
Bryce?
No. Bryce. That's another kid who's doing great too.
Yeah.
No, I remember his name later. And out of all that, all of those little things got me to that warehouse where I could do the culture, create the culture.
And your identity as a DJ alongside of it.
Yeah, but in the sense of like allowing people to know that there is no request here. There is no, your experience is not based on what you want to hear as an individual. Your experience is here because there is something happening at this moment where everybody's listening to one thing and the DJ is the one who's creating that moment for you. Your intervention as an individual is not going to make any dents on that. It's going to be, you come in because that's what everybody wants. Like, you know.
Gotcha. And this was the separate end of the pool from the top 40 DJs and stuff. Okay, I got you.
By far, because there is no request. There is, you know, the guy who did the warehouse for us, Matthew, he ended up building. So it was one of those warehouses, they have those offices, and they come out to a huge room.
Mm-hmm.
He put a metal things on top of that to hold weight and created a booth up there with couches.
Nice.
So nobody could talk to us. Nobody could, like, do anything. Because the beginning was a lot of people put, like, $100 bill and say, I'll play hip-hop right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. So we ended up doing that to divide that. And we had a huge American flag.
Nice.
And the American flag was covering, behind there was this, the guy, that warehouse was used to do boats, to do plexi.
Fiberglass?
Fiberglass, yes. So we covered that, and that's because the warehouse will keep going. We had all these things making a wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge, huge American flag.
Nice.
So we did that for 3 years, and that was the beginning of what I call, luck, like the universe, like, at that time, when the warehouse was fizzing out, a place called Esca, it was a restaurant. The daughter's owner of that place used to come to the warehouse to play and to party and to dance all night with us.
Mm.
And she said to us, "And you mind bringing that to my restaurant and play upstairs?" That place is now called Raffery's.
Okay.
And we lasted there 8 years.
Dang.
And it was the best time of my life. Like, that upstairs room was the perfect room for house music. You know, we had a thing created for upscale house music. Older people came, younger people came, fat, ugly. It didn't matter. It was a place for everybody to be part of a community as a culture of house music.
So what was night one like there?
It's funny because the warehouse really allowed me to just send an email and get people to come over in and I want to.
Okay.
That kind of changed as I got older.
So that was the underground coming up in a way.
That's the underground that I created as culture, part of the Sarasota culture, that we still have a lot of culture built into it.
Right.
That some people took to another level and some other people hijacked it and injected money, and they believe money will bring culture, and that's not the case.
Right.
So it is incredible when you start seeing, you start kind of like sifting to different DJs and people who are too egotistical to be part of a culture. Because you can be, that can be part of it too, where you believe that you're in such a place that you forget what the people want. Because including in electronic music, you also have people wanting certain things, you know, when it comes to now having genres like dubstep or trap or.
And that happens during the 8 years at ESCA?
Well, in ESCA was always house. Never changed.
No, I mean, like, there starts to be these other DJ cultures coming up.
Well, now you, ESCA is now Rafferty's, and they have dubstep and rap and top 40. But the idea is the place always been somehow dedicated to electronic music in so many levels.
Okay.
Even though it's something else, it's not house, but it's still electronic music. So to me, it kind of keeps it grounded into that world of electronic music. That's the second floor. That place always been that. And I tried to do something there, but it didn't work out, you know,
yeah,
for whatever reason. You know, it's funny to say this because I won't get in trouble for this. They kind of tell me no more because he said, and I'm quoting, because this is hilarious. I just love this. I'm quoting, "This is turning like a rave. We don't want that here."
You're like, dang it, I'm doing my job.
Damn it, right?
Yeah.
And then a year or so later, now they have this group of people that go there. Don't want to say no names. I love them. They're great, great, great kids. And it's called Rave in Rafferty's. So the irony is amazing. So, just put it out there the way it is, because it's so funny when it comes to like... It's
weird how the cycle comes around again with everything in a way.
So to me, when it comes to what I do now, it took a lot of work to go from when people are, because there's people that are doing great right now, like, Brian Busto or Jask or even Alboro.
Well, the normalization of the electronic music world has kind of changed, and you rode through that. So what does that kind of feel like when you go from you're this underground guy and you've been in restaurants, you coming out of a warehouse, but now all of a sudden dubstep and things like that start to come up and electronic music is becoming way more mainstream?
Well, it is interesting because this may have pissed a lot of people off, I'm about to say, but it's the truth. When it comes to a genre that it has been forever, and it has no need for being the next thing on the sense of like, this is what is popular now.
Right.
It has never been popular, but it's always been there. It's been house music. So if you start looking at 1978, 1976, 1969, you start listening to certain idea of 4/4 in the ground, created into like the blues and some of this culture. And that became what we know today as so many things as house, as the idea of 4/4 in the ground. But that one, let's say culture, because it's a culture, has been with us for almost 80 years now when it comes to like the idea of what it was, what it is today.
Right.
And in that time, you've seen many things come and go, including dubstep, including EDM.
Right.
Including trap, trance. Like there's so many things. Now trance is repackaged and melodic.
Whoever house. Thought Tiesto was going to go anywhere?
But he did.
Yeah.
But I know why. I read his book. That's because that really got me. He's messed up. I'm going to say this. His book allowed me to see the idea of hard work.
Huh.
But not in the idea of getting prized by your work, but getting prized by the culture or the community who is following you around.
Hmm.
Because it is really hard to, and you can be blinded by the ideals of what you're trying to do in a night, and you're not looking for what the crowds are looking for. You cannot create a club where you don't allow overweight people to come in or people that are certain looks, or you cannot start like shaving people off of society because you just don't like the way they look. Like house was never part of that. House was always really inclusive, no matter what you wear, or whatever deal you came with, you were still accepted.
Would you say that you noticed that about house music early on?
I noticed it in the sense of the money thing, where I came from in a lot of the warehouse things that we did, we had a price at the door, but people came in for free many times, and we didn't care how they look or, you know, we didn't care.
So the principle of inclusion was important to you?
Well, it was important to the community itself, and I think it's because... It's elusive when you go into a club setting and there is a dress code and there is a certain amount of liquor you have to spend for. And now that experience is unique to certain group of people. So a person who's an example, a rave is really interested because inside a rave, when I used to do some of the raves or be part of a rave, me making the rave or being in a rave as a dancer, is the amount of people that you see there that don't belong. Mm. From the kid with pop-up collars that look like a fresh college student for some, you know, house somewhere, yeah. You know, and or the older gentleman that is there also, and or the lady, little overweight lady, or you can see so many changes in the culture today when you start seeing that now more and more and more inclusive, but not in a club setting, not in a bar, more like if you go to a little festival or like the factory is like a little festival. Mm-hmm. There are many people in our areas that create events, you know, that are conducive to the culture, 100%, but not conducive to the idea of inclusion when it comes to all. You know, because it's not, it is hard because, you know, I'll give you an example. We used to do warehouse parties in Bradenton next to the airport. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of homeless people that came because of the noise. They came to like, because the noise will follow the noise, it will get there.
Right.
And it was hard for us to tell them not to come in, right? But we did things for them, you know. Well, they're hungry, we'll give you food, you know. And then they will go away. But they wanted something more than the music. And that's sometimes what I feel is a lot of people out there don't know what they want. They don't know because they haven't seen it. They haven't experienced it. And then when they go to a big city, or they go to Miami and they go to a club, or they go to a big event, and they get exposed to huge sound systems and lighting, all of a sudden they're hooked and they don't know what they're looking for, but they're looking for that experience. And I would say there's a lot of what I call bait and switch in this culture, where mm-hmm. you see a flyer and the flyer looks amazing. And you go to the place and they have no AC. And you're like suffering the whole night, right? And you're like, this is hot as hell. And those are things sometimes that as I get older, I realize that I want to create events for people that are my age. And most of those events have to be a little high end.
People be a little more comfortable.
People want to see town. People want to have a place to be able to see town.
Yeah. Just
to rest or have a place that is... A place that you can dance, but there is certain things that a lot of places around here don't understand. Like having a checkerboard on the floor doesn't mean you have a dance floor. You know, if you go back to like Mancuso's room, that was in New York City, the room they brought sand from the ocean to be poured into the dance floor, and they put pieces of the red rubber they use for running tracks.
Oh yeah,
little rubber. And they put it with the sand. And then they put the dance floor wood on top of that. So people had this cushion, this bounce. And they can dance for more hours because they didn't get as tired.
Ah.
And when I read that, I was blown away because somebody, Mancuso, went beyond just being a DJ. He even thought about people's feet, about people's motion on the feet. How would that... give their dancers a little more time in the dance floor.
Yeah.
You know? And that's something that is beyond what we think. A lot of people, they believe they're managers from restaurants or a nightlife and stuff. And some of those people, all they see is the end goal, there is money.
Right.
They don't see the ability to create an environment or curate music through the night or pick the right DJs for the beginning, the middle, and the end. They don't have any of that. They don't, because they're not an artist. They're not a person who's thinking about the music and the culture. They're just thinking about the money. And sometimes that goes to a lot of people that I know in this business, where they may start with a good goal, but when the money starts coming, everything changes. And then they're like anybody else. They start thinking about the money. And they forget about their crowd. They forget about the dance floor. They forget about the experience. They forget about that. And they start hiring DJs because they look good. And it just changes everything when it comes
to... Or they're otherwise celebrities.
But it changes what the culture really is, you know, because not knowing... This is funny. Not knowing a DJ when you go to a place mm-hmm. and that person takes you away and it makes you dance and you at the end of 2 hours, you're like, who is this person? And then they give you the name. And sometimes it was so good that you forget the name because it was not needed. He was doing what he was supposed to be doing. Like, they was giving people that experience. And that is something that I feel like a lot of people forget about, because they need to play the right song for the right people. They need to, and everybody comes in and they start asking for reggaeton or asking for hip hop or asking for Lil Wayne or whoever is the hot thing of that year. And that's how it shows you. I never did anything. And when I was beginning, I tried to be part of the older culture. And I changed my name. I had a name to play hip hop. It was called Secret Squirrel. That was my hip hop name.
Nice.
And I used that.
Nice.
I used that in Sarasota to play hip hop, to make little money, you know, and the hip hop that I chose to play was only 80s hip hop and instrumentals.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, well, this is great, but you have this guy? No, I don't have that. The one number one song always asked was Candy Shop. That was the song that I got asked hundreds of times. So I was always whatever. Thank you, 50 Cent.
Nice. So that brings up an interesting question, made me think. At the end of the night, how do you know that you've had a good set, or how do you become satisfied with your set if you don't get to hear from the person that doesn't remember your name, or they don't tell you that you took them away? Well, how is it that you feel like you've done your job at the end of the night if someone doesn't tell you so?
In the beginning, I had no idea. I have no idea, because I was so into looking down at my equipment that I had no idea. Now that I'm more confident, a lot more relaxed in so many ways, I look up and I can see if it's working. I can see if I got you. I can see if I got people dancing. I can see if people are engaging. Like, and I've always been the type of person that always loved the success of others when it came to the dance floor. Because there are people that have better, let's say, pick the right songs. An example, they cannot be a great DJ, but he picked the right five tracks that will go together perfectly, and he got the right time. It's always this equations that when you see it from the outside, you understand why that worked. And it's always like a coin. It's like a little coin for me that I put in my pocket. And I was like, I can do that now. I can understand the process of that. Like, and that's something you won't be able to see it if you try to DJ all the time and not allow yourself to enjoy all the DJs, enjoy all the musicians, have that enjoyment. Because the part of this is being communitized. This is not your the idea of electronic music. I don't think is a thing that is one person. Why I say that is because you meet a lot of people when you listen to Deadmau5 or you listen to all these people talk. They are talking about themselves, but they also have to praise and give thank you to other people before them.
Right.
A lot of the people today don't even know who made the tracks they play.
Right.
And it drives me bananas when you talk to people about music, or like what song, what instrument, what keyboard, what little instrument software you use. Like, none of those people are in that level. They only play tracks. And one of my favorite ones, I just got the 10 best tracks in Beatport. That's what I'm playing right now.
Is that what contributes to that? Just that you don't have to go buy a record? You can just hop on a playlist and...
I think that is bigger than that. I think it goes back to the idea of the viruses that is taking our society, and everything in as a human being is laziness. And that's why, you know, humans as we are, we always strive to be more lazy. AI, more lazy. It's, if we were a human, we'd be sitting down like Wall-E.
Yeah.
Like Wall-E.
I know, okay? A lot of people feel that way.
Just like Wall-E. Little fat people. Like, life is great. Like, and no working out, no exercise, no diets, no restrictions, no sacrifices, nothing. They're just engorging. Like,
yeah.
And let the AI do the work. Like, and that is coming. You know, and I hate this. And I, you know, when it comes to so many things, because AI could be better than a lot of other people when it comes to art, when it comes to so many things.
So is that creeping into the DJ world by curating?
Not even curating, DJing for the person. Physically, DJing for the person. There is a new thing that just Pioneer purchased last year. Is this company that you and I knew that we sell them in Samaj, the iDJ.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
Used to see the little things and it has softwares. And they got to a place, they went away from what the DJ was and they started putting AI into the system. So the last thing last year, they got purchased by Pioneers because they created something really interesting. They have a four setting of a crossfader, and the crossfader has a hip-hop setting. So you can go, and it goes, all on time. So that if you if the track is in 90 SBs per minute and you have something fast, it will set it up quick before it switches. It does everything for you.
Oh, man.
House, hip-hop, whatever you want. So that is creeping in 100%, 100%. But I feel that's still the idea of going from one song to the other.
As opposed to?
To create something. To give your dancers, your people who are listening at that moment, at that place, allowing to hear something they had never heard before.
And that's the roots of DJing?
100%. When the idea would be laying tracks together, and only because you're listening to the tracks, not because the track is a top 40 track, it's because that track may be good enough to be on top of something and create a new track out of that.
Mm.
And have those tracks going together for 4 or 5 minutes together. And all you do is fixing them and nudging them so they stay together. Like, that is the best. Because nowadays I can loop things and then keep them together and then I go and get something else and now I have 4 things. And if I have the keyboard, I can play keyboards. And you are more relaxed to add something to that palette of what you create in life with your DJ equipment.
So ultimately, do you feel that the technology that's part of what you do now is ultimately a gain, or it's too much in the lazy camp, or somewhere it's just a wash?
I feel like the people, it's going to depend on the person who's using the gear.
Of course.
So if you have a person who's determined like myself and wants to create something new for the person so I don't sound like the other guy, because that's my biggest thing is just I don't want to sound like the other guy. I just don't want to sound like the other guy playing tech house. I don't want to go and play more tech house. I want to bring something different. You know, I can go left field and play some weird remix of The Cure for a second and then go into that and then go out of that and take it somewhere else. Like, you know, that to me, that's more important than allow yourself just to, you know, we play tech house here all night. And I'm like, okay.
Do you think that just feeling that way alone has become uncommon? That people are mostly sitting out there thinking, now I do want to sound like everyone else because that's how I'm going to get a gig?
Yes, 100%. When you meet people, they only follow like follow the leader almost like, you know, like there are also different camps. Let's say like that, different camps. Without putting names out there, because I know people.
Yeah.
There are always people who have this idea of this culture that is being used in Mexico. It's called Tulum.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a style of culture. It's a style of music.
Mm-hmm.
It's this melodic house, kind of like slowed down quite a bit. It kind of reminds me a little. Remember the rappers that used to do the
Chopped and Screwed?
The Chopped and Screwed with the syrup.
Yeah.
And it was slow way down.
Yeah.
It has, I have to say, the fact that you can connect with me on that, that's kind of where some of these things go.
Okay.
And it's like, I imagine if you start thinking that you're at the beach and you see the ocean and you're not going to play techno.
No.
You're going to just slow down and everything slows down and 110 beats per minute, 115, like instead of being 130. So it's a huge thing. But it is, in the point of listening to that for 4 hours, is boring.
Right.
It's just boring, you know. Maybe if I'm doing ketamine, you know what I mean? Like, some, you know, maybe if I'm so slow and I'm like, but not in the sense of like an inclusion.
I was going to say, you're not bringing everybody together doing that.
There's no inclusion, right? So when I talk about curating nights, is when you have somebody who knows what they're doing and they have a DJ in the beginning who's a slow-down DJ who may be playing Tulum or Afro House or even instrumental breakbeats or something that is non-heavy, hard for at least an hour in the beginning. So everybody gets situated and And then you start with the next guy who's going to be, you know, 120, 126, 121, not too fast. And then the last guy is going to be 130, 126. You know, it's going to be now fast. But that guy is going to play tech house. That guy is going to be what the night is going to end up being. And that normally is the time for a headliner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what you kind of like want to do. A lot of people don't do that here. And it's because there's too much the idea of egotistical people when they have amazing equipment, amazing everything, but they not allow themselves to be part of a culture because all they want is to succeed themselves and nobody else.
When did you see that shift?
Oh, I think it's always been there in the sense of like when you, in the past, there was a lot of gatekeepers and the idea of being a gatekeeper is always been part of his culture.
Mm.
Somebody who he doesn't want you around or who they don't want to, they will make sure you're not around or they will not, or will say no to you for gigs. And the things in that nature.
Right.
It's always been some sort of a gatekeeper. But in the past, they were stronger than today. Today, you can break walls by using talking. That you can break so many walls when it comes to the ideal because they're no longer in power. Because culture doesn't belong to one person.
Right.
So the ideal culture belongs to all of us. And to me, when you create events where you have merges of things, are the most successful events. Like, I think that's why our lab is a successful event. You have a person playing guitar, a woman dancing, a saxophone player, a guy playing house music. You know, you got a band coming and playing here and there. Like, there are things that people come in and they're excited to see what's next, but not in the ideal, oh, this is a house event only. No, it's not. It's art.
So do you feel like the principle of diversity is inextricably tied to the principle of inclusion? The diversity brings the inclusion?
I think diversity in music when it comes to curate a night is important. If you have a guy playing acoustic guitar or a band playing some like 80s pop rock or whatever they are, because there are people that are, there's a lot of genres that are coming back out of nowhere.
Yeah, right.
And he's just like, oh, this sounds like...
But house remains.
Well, it's weird because like even on the aspect of rock, is so hard when I go and look for rock, new rock, and I'm not able to find artists that can keep me with them.
Right.
I'm not able to like get hooked into somebody. But all of a sudden, I go to SoundCloud and I'm like, punk rock, and I play, and it gives me this place. Out of like, I don't know, 1,000 songs, I go through one. Be like, who is this person? And it's not even a band; it's two guys, and they have drum machines, and they now sound like a freaking band. But then you go into them, and they're not. They're two guys, white as hell, and never seen the sun. And they're great. They're like amazing. And,
right.
And you're like, damn, this is good. But then you kind of lose that luster. I'm like, I thought it was a band. I wanted to meet the drummer.
Yeah.
And it's this weird thing. And I think it's because I'm old. I see certain things, but I'm also new in what the equipment can do. You know.
Right.
Because I make music sometimes as a challenge. I make reggae. It was the hardest thing to make was that fucking thing. That was the hardest thing to make. First, it drive me nuts. I spent days trying to get that. Ding, ding, oh.
See, you don't want to do lazy and get AI to play that for you. So talk to me a little bit. This is somewhat column B. Talk to me a little bit about when you start making music.
Ooh, that was 16 years ago. Oh, making music was so interesting because through the DJ part, you meet all these DJs. And
right.
Some of those DJs are really successful and they're producers themselves. And they're producing in a level that they produce tracks every day. They have a new track, or at least every week they have something new. So Bryce was one of them. To be fair, Bryce was one of the seed that he planted the seed in me.
Same. Shout out Bryce.
Yeah, shout out to Bryce. Bryce really helped me and understand and Chris. Nozark, who's also my DJ teacher, he also made music. And made music that was the weirdest music I ever heard in my life. But it was the most interesting, captivating sounds that he used that even though it was like, it was just, you stay for whatever, what's next.
Like, right.
it was such a weird music. And you're like, what's next? Oh, there's something else coming, right? And he'd be like, yeah, he's coming. And you hear this wacky stuff that years later, what he was making was 5 years before any of the dubstep was real. That kid was making that. He was making the 7/7s. He was making when the syncopation of dubstep started was 7/7, not 4/4.
Right.
He was making that by pure just...
Wandered into it.
Yes. And that was, to me, it was like, that is talent. I mean, Chris was an alcoholic. He's not anymore. I love you, Chris. But at that time, you know, he was paying me rent with records. That's why I got a large collection of good-looking records. Thank you, Chris. So it's like, it is funny when it comes to that, but talented people come in many shapes and forms, and sometimes they're not in the place you think they're going to be.
Right.
They may not going to be on a Sylvan music school. No. It could be an alcoholic drunk guy somewhere. Like, we don't know that. Like, and that's the part sometimes I get excited
about. What do you think gave you that perspective?
Seeing so many artists that they were nobodies and they were amazing. Like, through me touring, or when I went to San Francisco, I went to California, went to Texas, went to New York, and did my little touring, you can see people that were so much better than I was, but they couldn't make it because they had problems, you know?
So once you start making music, what do you do with it?
In the beginning, it's funny, I just show it to people. There was no internet, and there wasn't, but not really a place to put your music.
Right.
They were, but I didn't know where they were. They were at that moment, right?
And you were in DJ life primarily.
Yeah. So I kind of like played the tracks for people when I was playing in places. And then people would come to me, oh, who made that? Oh, me. And I was kind of like what it was. But it was, I have a lot of tracks in the beginning.
So you were sprinkling them in your sets?
Yes. But the funny part was like the first time I opened a SoundCloud account,
mm-hmm.
Like I opened it up and I, you know, I put tracks in there. And now it's like it's 10 years later, the tracks. And there's thousands of people that follow me on SoundCloud. And I never really went there because I didn't know how to use it. And I'm just using it now. And I'm putting my new tracks. And so many people say things to me. And they were so nice to me. So positive. It felt so good because I never knew that I was there. But after my wife died and I was in this depression thing, I ended up going there. And I found all these like people talking about the music in such a positive way. That really helped me, like,
nice.
In so many ways.
And you didn't even know that stuff was there?
I have no idea it was there because I never really, I didn't know how to do that. I was just, you know.
You just put the music up and went about your day.
Yeah. So that is the part now that I'm learning. That is, you know, there has to be some sort of communication with your fans and there's something there that I don't know how to do, you know. So I normally just be myself and myself gets me in trouble, you know.
Yeah.
I say things to people they don't want to hear and. And I,
get, I won't tell anyone.
And they get mad at me because I'm truthful. And sometimes, you know, I feel like it's better to be like this than to just run around the bush. You know, if you don't meet people like me, you're not going to be okay, you know.
Right.
So I feel like there is has to be somewhere when people have to tell you, hey, you're just doing something wrong. Nothing bad about it, you know, but you can do better, you know.
Right.
And that's what I will tell a lot of people around here in Sarasota. They can do way better. We have a culture in Sarasota that is literally almost 20 years old when it comes to electronic music. A lot of the older people who live here are from big cities. Those people listen to electronic music, now live here.
Good point.
And all they have to listen to is the freaking Para guy and some cover bands.
Yeah.
And some really bad hip hop. And nobody does anything for it because nobody cares in a sense of a culture because they feel like they lost. They feel like
because
like they're whoever they were lost. Because that's the part sometimes when you look to talk to people, it's like, I love electronic music. And I tell people, what do you do about it? Have you opened a place? Have you tried to do anything? Man, I was like, no. And it's like, nobody really thinks about creating a place with couches and a setting that is more like 1980s cigar bars
right.
without the cigars.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because there is no people understanding the culture.
They just see it as the money grab?
Yes, 100%. Because why are you going to change something that you don't need to fix?
Ah, if you're already making money doing X, why care about Y, period? I get you.
This is the Dude, like to me, one of the oldest places I've been trying. Gator Club, if you listen to this, I don't want to work upstairs. That room is perfect for house music. Just if you listen to this, Gator Club, please, house music upstairs will be good. And that room upstairs is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's perfect for house.
Yeah.
But they got, you know, Ghetto Fabulous. And I guess that's what white people want.
Right.
You know, if you're 46 and up, 50 Cent and Ghetto music for you, I guess.
Right.
But that's the part I don't like, because I know there are great bands out there, great bands. And the ability to see a band has gone now. You have to go next to a freeway or go into Oscura in Presidente. You don't have any more places. They used to be in downtown, so there used to be places to watch bands all the time, from jazz to rock to punk. They're no longer there.
Right.
The place that used to play jazz and rock bands now is a gym. It's, you know, it's like, that's to me, it's like, we lost something on the
I was
of
just
life.
Gonna say, so the palpable bit for you is the culture lost.
Well, because it's something that it deals with the ability, if it's not fixed, you don't broke it. But also there is people in power in our cities, they don't want the shift of culture. They wanna keep the culture on Para Bay. They wanna have the Para guy singing and the Doors or like something Piña Colada, whatever yeah. that guy is.
Yeah.
That's what they want. They don't want any shifts. But when they make you drive to Tampa and Pittsburgh because you wanna have another culture, and then perfect example, I went to see Marfarina the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It was a packed house, and everybody in there was between the age of 35 to 55. And it was so interesting to see that age group being pampered with chairs and couches and buying drinks, and it was a packed house. But it's because everybody knew that they were being taken care of in a sense of that upscale experience to go listen to some house, not being on a place with no AC or chairs. And it's like, you know. Like, again, there are certain things, I think, the culture that it needs to change, and the buildings and the things are already there. Like the Westin upstairs and the pool room can do way better than what they do now. Horrible music there. I think the only place that really put in music in the sense of some sort of a different type of music when it comes to DJs would be Art Ovation.
Right.
Putting so many DJs on the rooftop playing on Sundays and some other things.
What do you think that having the healthy culture, regardless of its house music, but just like the music cultures in general, you mentioned rock, jazz, all this, when we used to have the pantheon of music, what do you think having the healthy music culture does for the community?
Well, I feel like we have a huge difference of demographics happening in Sarasota, especially because you see more younger people now. The kids that are in high school now are past 21, 25. And that is the what I call the next group of partiers, you know. And if even those people that are driving to see shows, whatever it is, if it's rock or techno, those people are still driving somewhere else. They're literally driving somewhere else. They're even because what I do, everybody does, they will get in their phones or the computer and try to find something. I literally find something. Find like where's a show or whatever genre of music. Most likely it's going to be in Tampa or St. Petersburg or Orlando. Like,
it's an easy enough to find.
But it's not going to be here. And then what is here, when people get to have a little sniff of some culture, that culture is washed down. You have to pay $30 to come in. Is you know, if you don't look certain way, you can't come in. So there is certain things where, yeah, there is culture, but you inherent in the culture. You're making people hate that culture now.
Because well, when it's working.
Oh, when it's working, like we did a party last Sunday. Everybody was there. Fab, Luke, Dunk, big hunky guys, douchebag. Everybody was there.
So what do you think those are? What do you think that brings to the community? Just the actual inclusion in action, it helps people be more inclusive in their lives, or it's just a more positive way to be able to let loose and not feel like you're just being milked for money?
I kind of feel if we really had that, if we really had the idea of culture, if we go into the idea of entertainment, right? Just the entertainment part of it, the aspect of it, where if a person get together with people for certain things.
Right.
I give you an example. I've done this. I bet you guys do it all the time. It's a Friday night. You go out and start walking. And you go walk around Main Street.
Yep.
And you're going to find places that are always packed, no matter what's Friday or what Saturday it is.
Right.
Like Smokey Joe's and places like that. But when you go in there, people are really looking at people. There is not really a focal point of entertainment. It's what I call a culture of a bar culture.
Okay.
And the bar culture in America is huge when it comes to like darts, pool, watching sports, certain ability of listening to wash out rock and roll in the back. And now you have a bar.
Gotcha.
And that culture is everywhere to the United States. Like literally, like that show Cheers did great. Did a great job on that part. Because now you see that everywhere you go. Like if you remember this, so everybody knows.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
It is a culture now that is part of America. And I feel like that culture was tied to the rock and roll.
Yes.
And as we got older and everything changed, people trying to like, hey, let's not do rock and roll now because it's not that popular. Let's do something else.
Right.
And then they just become a bar. And that's one is perfect example because that bar really has nothing to offer when it comes to entertainment. The entertainment is watching people, darts, pool, a really classic certain things. And that place is always packed. Always. And it's a demographic of younger people to do that. That always surprised me because I go there sometimes and I see these kids. And when I go to the factory, I go to this place in Tampa to party. And then you see them there. And I was like, huh. So these fuckers go out.
Right.
There's nothing to do in this town.
So they just by default support the bar culture.
Because there's nothing else to do.
Gotcha.
And that part sometimes it falls over the, again, laziness. Like the work that takes to do a night, the ability to create a flyer, talent, bookings, sound systems, making the place look a certain way. I think a lot of people know the work that it takes, and they don't want to do it because it's like an onion. It's a lot of tears to that experience of entertainment when it comes to that part.
You're not
kidding.
A
lot of people don't want to be part of that. When it comes to a manager situation, they don't want to be part of it. Why I want to pay you? I don't want to pay you. Like there's this thing, this bar culture that is always being the same culture, no matter what year. It's always this person who's really doesn't want to facilitate you money, doesn't want to facilitate you their time because they want to be like, I'm too busy to talk to you, okay? That's kind of how they make you feel. And it's funny because that part of it is what kind of kills me because it's like we're trying to be your soldier. We're trying to make this property be better. We're trying to make this better for you, trying to bring culture that is different because you will be different. Nobody else doing this around here. You will be a different culture. And we bring in certain ability from house to breakbeats to lounge to classical hip hop and instrumental and go into like jazz and blues if I want to. But that part of it, people don't see it because, why I want to pay somebody to bring a sound system and I have to make flyers. And I think people don't see beyond that because an example, owner of a place, I would love this, always happens to me. The first night, didn't do that well.
Why didn't do that well? What happened?
And then the second and third night, packed. And then they shit the hell up, right?
Of course.
But then the reality is from the beginning, they think that your job is to bring people to the building.
Right.
And that's not your job.
But now that air has been created.
100%. And it's because laziness. Like you look at clubs in the past and today, they're really successful. They're successful because they have a certain amount of artists that come through that year. They are really different. Really different. Like, you know, they're bringing artists to Tampa right now that I'm excited as hell to go see. From female DJs to groups of people or artists that play with instruments, like breaking the mold when it came to some of those things.
Very cool.
And that is the part sometimes, like I feel like I have booking people and stuff. They offer me people all the time. And I would love to, but around here, I'm wasting my money. Like I'm gonna pay for that. Me and my friends will listen to this guy,
right?
And that is the part sometimes you don't get to see, is because you don't see how many people are doing what I'm doing with other cultures, if it's rock or hip hop or whatever. Because everybody has some sort of a flag they're representing when it comes to that.
And electronic music really did not start that way.
No, it started with
being opposite.
Yeah. And I think I always feel like it's because you have now that
it's just tribalism everywhere.
But it's a human thing. It's just everybody wants to be part of something,
right?
Like, but you know, this is something funny that I remember saying to this to somebody the other day, and you know, the idea of an artist when it comes to ego is the tendency to be alone, and the tendency to succeed alone, or succeed in the shoulders of other people. Mm. So when a person that is an egotistical person sees talent, is not going to go towards the talent to praise it. It's going to stop that talent.
Gotcha.
And it's going to try to stifle or to make rot ways or things against that talent if it's better than them. Because now it's a thread. And I think that is what I've seen a lot. When you see people that are like, oh man, this is not good. I mean, I don't know. And the fact is, I am fully prepared. Like anybody wants to, like DJ contest, I'm there. It's not a doubt.
Yeah.
Is I know what I'm doing, and I have certain hunches that I know will work, but a lot of people don't believe in the aspect of working hard for something. They want to get gratification in an instant.
Right.
And that doesn't happen with some of these cultures.
Man, that's just trickled into everything. But that's what the sync button does. I was going to say, I'm going to take you right off guard on
No, I'm kidding, dude. It is funny because I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I never did.
No, it's just a clear fork in the road.
But I mean, I see it as there's tools. Like the tools on Ableton Live, when you have to do an EQ, they give you a 3 sound EQ or 8 or the other one.
Yeah.
You can download an EQ that has like your mama included in there.
Right.
And there's many choices when it comes to that. But this is something that I know for a fact. You cannot fake the funk.
Amen to that.
You just can't. You cannot. People will listen to you and will see if something is different there. If something is better than the other or just different, or they hear something that it makes that person different. And I feel like that's what I sometimes go and listen to, and I can tell who is better than others.
It's almost like the equivalent of an auto-tuned vocal.
But again, like when an example, you play instruments and you're successful in a lot of ways when it comes to your art. You will listen to other people that play certain instruments and you can tell.
Of course.
You'd be like, oh, it's a newbie. Oh, that guy's been doing it for a long time. And there is an evolution of the ear that takes you there.
Right.
Where like, I give you a perfect example that I think is okay to say. Like, I sometimes walk around here and I go walk and I look at things. And before that place, the Pizza and Brewery, now it's called the Pie now. The Sarasota Pie.
Yeah, yep.
Different place.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't play music now, right? But before they did, they played certain music that was really violent. And they had people there for that choice. And they choose for that kind of music is because it was always packed. It was always packed. And they use like, you know, what I call fighting hip-hop more. That they mix that with trap and dubstep and they did it together.
Yeah.
And when you listen to those type of sounds, they are violent sounds, no doubt. Just
yeah. Just even if you don't understand the language.
You know.
Yeah, right.
And they have to put two police officers on that corner, literally at all times, because of the amount of fights that were happening all the time. When I started working at Jume down the street a couple months ago before they closed, I worked in Jumeirah for a month before they decided to go hip hop, and I had people coming. I had some of the best nights playing house. It was such a good little place. I loved it, but the guy didn't want to be part of it. Like he just didn't want to be part of it. He didn't understand it. He didn't know what it was. And this guy was clearly a hip-hop head, clearly a person who wanted to do urban right from the get-go.
Right.
You know. But again, I cannot, that's the part, like, you cannot discuss that with other people when their viewfinders are always in hip-hop land, or they don't even know house exists. They don't even know. Now people understand what some sort of a house for, because now he has breached into, like, the top 40s. Now everybody listens to house. Like, every single rap artist right now in the past 5 years has used a house beat
remix
for their raps. Like,
oh, man.
So you can now understand, like, in the past, a rapper didn't need to make a house mix.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't.
No.
Now they do. Now they do. It's a must. So when you're a rapper, you do your a cappella, you do your main song, your original song, circuit mixes, and then a house mix. And that's part of the work that you put in when you go into the places for the studio parts.
Hmm.
Like 100%. Because I seen some of those things where they give you what you're supposed to be, what they're expecting from you.
Right.
Because I did a beat for this kid. And it was literally like they wanted house mix. I'm like, oh, damn. But that's the way it is, because they know there is money on that part of it now, because it's now a monetization situation. Now the house has breached over the other side. People are like, okay, we can make that into house. You know, it's like, so now you hear everything into house now. I mean,
and then maybe you cannot have two police officers on the corner.
Well, now you see that, because house and the idea of house music doesn't do that.
No.
It's such a weird thing. You can have 1,000 people under one room playing house, and people don't fight.
No,
it's so weird.
No, but if you couldn't imagine that.
But if you play,
that like, would be a messed up scene.
But if you play like some kind of booty break beats or like some bass house mixed with that, then you're gonna have some fights, you know. But somehow, when you listen to house or deep house or like lounge and stuff like that,
it's impossible.
The vibe is different.
Like, yeah,
it's just way different.
Like, someone should do a science experiment on that. There are some deep seated parts of our lizard brain or something at work there for sure.
No, there's a couple, man. There's I don't want to go into this because I know something about that. You know, Goa trance.
Yeah,
right. There's a guy who just died this year. He was Goa Gil. He was the creator of Goa Music. He went to an island. He had the biggest club in the island of Goa Music in the world. And this guy got DJ like all the way into his 60s. You know, big guy. He got himself Goa. He was really fat. And he did this stage. I remember him 15 years ago playing with tapes. And then he would like cut him and then tape him, pack case him again and then play tapes. And he would speed up the house so it would be fast, because that's Goa. Goa is 160, 170. It's really fast, but it's house. It's like da-da-da-da. And Goa is a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Today, you look at Goa and the idea of this beat, and it is now like locked with some of the hippies community.
Ah.
Some of the tie-dye, and, you know, so tie-dye went from like deadheads, something somehow transformed into this like Goa heads now. And the tie dye and all that stuff transferred to these Goa music,
because the vibe was close enough to migrate.
I don't know if it's the vibe, but it's just like it just happened where appropriation of like the hippie stuff is like, let's put it over there. And and now you see that today. And Tulum is another thing too. They didn't went tie dye, but they went hippie with the white clothing and and the like the little long shirts and like
right. Oh
and,
yeah.
And I just laugh because it's like, is part of the tribalism, trying to be different, trying to do that. But again, I feel like that part is the easy part, because the artist is, I feel like we don't, and again today, we don't see the artists as they're working hard.
No,
like we
purposefully,
don't, we don't see that part of it. Like you meet people that they play a classical guitar. That's one of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I love their sound, but they get the end of the stick, because that type of entertainment is not looked for anymore. And I remember that type of entertainment was the Cat's Meow.
Oh, yeah.
And in a way that it was sort of, I was like paying you big money for that. And now it's just like, eh. And I'm like, what? And I know all there are people, I know there's still places where that's the Cat's Meow, like, because that's classical guitar. Like, I think that's the highest thing since like the fucking 1700s with the three strings.
Yeah.
Like
lutes. We've like, gone from lutes on
like,
up.
You know what I mean? Like that's the part sometimes I feel like that all together compromise that idea that we get too indicted in ideas of like, this is what we want as owners of clubs and we just want to make money no matter what.
That's well, gatekeeping and yeah, capitalism.
Yeah, but that's the part of it. Like, if somebody in Sarasota, and I say this, will make a club or make a Quasimodo club, like something that is not a club, but it's a club.
Yeah.
Like Oscura. Oscura is the best place that I've seen. Like the best place when it comes to certain things.
Shout out Oscura. Shout out Ben.
It's like, you look at that freaking place, I'm like, I love it. I'm like, I want to fucking make a rave here. It's like, but then you, I went to one of their shows, the guy with the wolf's heads. The kids that dress like teenage wolves.
I'm not sure, but that sounds fun.
Dude, you gotta go watch.
Yeah,
they're crazy.
That sounds fun.
I'm in. One of them is dressed up like the wolf with a mask and the hair coming down the hands, and he has the whole like a basketball get up like the movie.
Yeah, like Teen Wolf.
Well, dude, the best. But it was packed.
Yeah,
I had a blast. But that's the part. I allow myself to experience other things because I am not such a like, this is the only thing I'm a house. No, there is more to what I do because sounds can be used for house, like any sound. So when I hear this music also like gets my creative juices going. Like
love that.
When it comes to that part, because I love to hear all the DJs and go to see all the shows. But when you start seeing that they're just like egotistical pricks, you're like, oh, I'm out of here. Yeah,
it's like, the other side of the fence.
It's just like why I'm here to help you and this sounds like shit.
Right.
See you later. It's like, that is the part. It's like, I already paid my $30. God damn it. Then you go somewhere else. But that's the part. Like, Sarasota needs more nightlife, but not in the way they are doing it when it comes to this ideal for all people. There should be a differences of places. There should be a place where all people go. It should be a place where younger people go. If the old people want to mix together, they're still there for them. But there has to be a difference where they cannot cookie dough all these places to be the same for everybody.
Right.
Because it doesn't make any sense why you got an 80-year-old man to the window, to the floor. Like, it just doesn't.
It's not going to work.
It just doesn't make any sense. Like, this guy, maybe he's drunk as hell, doesn't care. Because, of course, you get drunk enough. They don't care what you're
playing. Yeah, we're all going from the floor to the ceiling.
They can be playing polka. They don't care. But that's the part sometimes I feel like you got a chance and an opportunity where if you create more events in certain times of the year that are dedicated to younger crowds, not going into the EDM idea, but try to teach them that there's other more in that electronic culture that they love, if they love EDM or they love trap or they love dubstep, there's also another thing called house they can actually be spoke to and be part of. And that allows them to be part of it. Because I would love to have a place where I have three rooms or two rooms, and I would have to have a Latino room, a dubstep room, and a house room. That would be my dream if I could do that for people to have different entities of cultures. That would, revenue alone would be great when it comes to having those people together. You know?
Right.
Because I feel like that is something that we're lacking. Like, we got that place where they do the circus right here in Fruitville, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember I rent that once to do a party. We did a thing called a phone party. And we had this side with hip-hop, with the extreme. And I had the other side playing house with me and Kiko. And we had foam, and it was, like, the best. But it was all, like, we could see the there was a lot of... It was challenging, but there was things there that you can see that Sarasota is built for this. But the people who are having the ownership and stuff, they don't want to be part of that because they're afraid of that culture. They see that culture as like a rave culture, like a drug culture. So they have these like predetermined ideas where you can see, I don't want that, man. No, I don't. This is drug people. No, I don't want. And it's funny because it's like, there's more drug people on hip hop doing coke than anything else in the fucking world. But,
right.
But this is like not even dancing is a problem.
It's a weird stigma. Well, sir, you've given me a lot to think about, and I anticipated that, and I'm very glad for that.
So I keep a PG-13.
Oh, shit.
It didn't say nothing bad.
So let's get you out of here on something fun you can think about right quick. If you could DJ any venue, where would it be and who are you going to put on the bill with you?
Oh, my God.
And I don't care if it's Red Rocks or the Moon. Where would you DJ and who are you putting on the bill with you?
I had a dream, like a real dream when I was like sleeping many years ago. And I wake up and I was like, this is amazing. I had a dream that I was DJing on a boat that was ginormous and it was shaped like a turtle. So it was shaped like a turtle and it was in the middle of the ocean, right? And it was like the stage and DJ and lights, everything. And I would like to play in that turtle boat. That would be my choice.
The dream turtle ship.
Yeah, that would be my choice. And there was a group of people. It was Matias Tasman, Esquilante, and Matias Tasman, Raul Esquilante. Oh my God, I forgot this guy's name. I'll remember later. Those three guys make a band called Better Lost Than Stupid.
Love that name.
And those would be the people I would love to play. They haven't played in like 8 years together.
Yeah.
And they were amazing because they're literally using DJ equipment to play together. So there are three DJs playing together out of one mixing board.
Dang.
All DJing together, but they're practiced before and they have everything real tight.
Yeah.
And they do, they do great things. It just sounds amazing. Like, it's just crazy.
On the turtle ship.
On the turtle ship, yes. That's right.
That may be one of the best answers I've gotten to the fun question. Well, man, I can't wait to do this again. I really appreciate you coming down. You're just a mountain of food for thought, and I can't thank you enough, sir.
I was nervous. I'm like, this is going to be horrible. I'm going to be talking all kinds of crazy shit. It didn't went that way. I'm like, yeah, I could be PG-13.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about the lions and the tigers.
Nah.
That's my motherfucker.
That'll be part two.
Part two.
Thank you, man.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, man.